Disc 2.
4. A twilight that was misty and seemed perpetual lay in silvery gray layers over the green lushness of Naboo as the Federation landing ships descended out of the black infinity of space to settle slowly planetward. One set of three moved away from the others, dropping silently through clouds that hung still and endless across the world's emerald surface. Ghost-like as they passed through the haze, double wings shaped like a giant eye, they materialized one by one near a vast murky swamp. As they gently landed next to the dark waters and clumps of trees and grasses, their metal bodies parted to allow the bulbous-nosed transports to offload onto the surface and begin forming up. Some distance away from the closest of the landing craft, Obi-Wan Kenobi's head broke the swamp's still waters. A quick breath, and he was gone again. He surfaced once more, farther away, and this time took a moment to look back at the invasion force. Dozens of transports filled with battle droids and tanks were moving into place in front of the landing craft. Some hovered above the swamp's waters. Some had found purchase on dry ground. Far to his left, he caught sight of a shadowy form running through the mist and trees. Qui-Gon. Obi-Wan took another deep breath, submerged swiftly, and began to swim. Qui-Gon Jinn slipped wraith-like through the swamp, listening to the sounds of heavy rustling and snapping branches behind him as the Trade Federation transports began to advance. Mixed with the deeper, heavier whine of the transport engines was the higher-pitched buzzing of STAPS, single-trooper aerial platforms, small, individually piloted mobile gun units used to transport battle droids as scouts for the main army. The STAPS whipped above the watery terrain of Naboo, fleeting shadows as they surged in front of the larger transports. Animals of all shapes and sizes began to scatter from their places of concealment, racing past Qui-Gon in search of safety. Ikopi, Falumpasets, Motts, Pico Picos, the names recalled themselves instantly to the Jedi Master from his preparation for this journey. Dodging the frightened creatures stampeding around him, he cast about for Obi-Wan, then picked up his pace as the dark shadow of a transport appeared out of the mist directly behind him. He was running out of firm ground and searching for a way past a large lake when he saw a strange frog-like creature before him. It was squatting in the water, its rubbery body crouched over a shell it had just pried open, its long tongue licking out the insides with a quick whipping movement, its throat swallowing. Casting aside the empty shell, it rose to face Qui-Gon, its long flat ears dangling from its amphibious head in broad flaps, its duck-like snout working thoughtfully around whatever delicacy it had removed from the shell. Eyes that protruded from the top of its head blinked in confusion, taking in Qui-Gon and the animals about him, then seeing clearly for the first time the massive shadow from which they fled. "Uh-oh," the creature muttered, the syllables clouded but recognizable. Qui-Gon broke left past the strange creature, anxious to get out of the path of the approaching transport. The creature dropped the shell, eyes wide and frantic, and grabbed onto Qui-Gon's robes. "Help me! Help me!" it cried plaintively, the rubbery face contorting in shock and desperation. "Let go!" Qui-Gon snapped, trying in vain to break free. The transport thundered toward them, skimming the surface of the swamp, flattening grasses and stirring up water spouts in the wake of its passing. It bore down on Qui-Gon as he fought to break free of the creature that clung to him, dragging it sideways in a futile effort to escape. Finally, with the transport only meters away and looming over him like a building about to topple, the Jedi Master pushed the creature into the shallow water and sprawled face down on top of it. The Trade Federation transport passed over them in a wash of sound and shocked air, the vibrations hammering into their prone forms, flattening them into the mire. When it was safely passed, Qui-Gon pulled himself out of the mud and took a deep, welcome breath. The strange creature rose with him, still clinging to his arm, cloudy water dripping from its flat-billed face. It gave a quick glance after the departing transport, then threw itself on Qui-Gon, hugging him ecstatically. "Oh boy, oh boy!" it gasped with a high-pitched warbled sound.
I love yous forever.
The creature began kissing him. Let go, Qui-Gon huffed. Are you brainless? You almost got us killed. The creature looked offended.
Brainless? I speak.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent. Qui-Gon was having none of it. Now let go of me and get out of here. He freed himself from the creature and began to move off, glancing around uneasily as the high-pitched buzz of steps sounded in the distance. The creature hesitated, then began trailing after him.
No, no, me stay with you, me stay. Jar Jar be loyal, humble Gungan servant, be you's friend me.
The Jedi Master barely glanced at him, watching the shadows, searching now for Obi-Wan. Thanks, but that won't be necessary. Better be off with you. Jar Jar the Gungan splashed after him, billed mouth working, arms waving.
Oh, but 'tis necessary. 'Tis demanded by the gods. 'Tis life debt. Me know this, sure as name be Jar Jar Binks.
The swamp reverberated with the sound of Stapp engines, and now two of the gun platforms burst from the mist, bearing down on a fleeing Obi-Wan Kenobi, battle droid drivers wheeling their speeders to the attack. Qui-Gon pulled free his lightsaber, motioning Jar Jar away. I have no time for this now.
But must take me with yous, keep me.
Jar Jar stopped, hearing the steps, turning to see them bearing down, eyes going wide all over again.
Uh-oh, we gonna...
Qui-Gon grabbed the Gungan and threw him face down in the swamp water once more. Stay put. He flicked on the lightsaber, bracing himself as Obi-Wan and the pursuing steps approached. Jar Jar's head popped up.
We're gonna die! He screamed.
The battle droids opened fire with laser cannons from their gun platforms just as Obi-Wan reached his friend. Qui-Gon blocked the bolts with his lightsaber and deflected them back into the attack craft. The steps exploded in shards of hot metal and fell into the swamp. An exhausted Obi-Wan wiped his muddied brow, gasping for breath.
Sorry, Master. The swamp fried my lightsaber.
He pulled out his weapon. The business end was blackened and burned. Qui-Gon took it from him and gave it a cursory inspection. Behind him, Jar Jar Binks pulled himself out of the muddy swamp water and blinked curiously at the newly arrived Jedi.
You forgot to turn off your power again, didn't you, Obi-Wan? His friend asked pointedly.
Obi-Wan nodded sheepishly.
It appears so, Master.
It won't take long to recharge, but it will take some time to clean it up. I trust you have finally learned your lesson, my young Padawan.
Yes, Master.
Obi-Wan accepted the proffered lightsaber with a chagrined look.
Jar Jar pushed forward, amphibious feet flopping, ears flapping, long limbs looking as if they might take him in almost any direction.
You save me again, hey?
He asked Qui-Gon rhetorically.
Obi-Wan stared.
What's this?
A Gungan, one of the locals. His name's Jar Jar Binks.
Qui-Gon's attention was directed out at the swamp. Let's go, before more of those staps show up.
More?
Jar Jar gasped worriedly.
You say more?
Qui-Gon was already moving, shifting into a steady trot through the mire. Obi-Wan was only a step behind, and it took a moment for Jar Jar to catch up to them, his long legs working frantically, his eyes rolling.
Excuse me, but the most grand, safest place is in Otagunga, he gasped at them, trying to catch their attention.
All about, lost somewhere in the mists, staps sounded their high-pitched whine.
Otagunga, Jar Jar repeated. 'Tis where I grew. 'Tis safe city.
Qui-Gon brought them to a halt, staring fixedly now at the Gungan.
What did you say? A city?
Jar Jar nodded eagerly.
Can you take us there?
The Gungan seemed suddenly distraught.
Ah, oh, maybe me not really take yous. Not really, no.
Qui-Gon leaned close, his eyes dark.
No?
Jar Jar looked as if he wished he could disappear into the swamp completely. His throat worked and his billed mouth opened and closed like a fish's.
"'Tis embarrassment, but me afraid me be banished. sent out. Me forget Boss Nass do terrible hurt to me if go back there. Terrible bad hurt.
A low, deep, pulsating sound penetrated the whine of the steps, rising up through mist and gloom, growing steadily louder. Jar Jar glanced around uneasily.
Uh-oh!
You hear that? Qui-Gon asked softly, placing a finger on the Gungan's skinny chest. Jar Jar nodded reluctantly.
There's a thousand terrible things heading this way, my Gungan friend.
And when they find you, they will crush you into dust, grind you into little pieces, and then blast you into oblivion, Obi-Wan added, with more than a little glee. Jar Jar rolled his eyes and gulped.
Oh, use point very good one.
He gestured frantically.
This way, hurry quick.
In a rush, they raced away into the twilight mist. Sometime later, the Jedi and the Gungan emerged from a deep stand of swamp grass and thick rushes at the edge of a lake so murky that it was impossible to see anything in the reflection of twilight off the surface. Jar Jar bent double, three-fingered hands resting on bony knees as he fought to catch his breath. His rubbery form twisted this way and that as he looked back in the direction from which they had come, long ears flapping with the movement. Obi-Wan shook his head at Qui-Gon Jinn in faint reproval. He was not happy with the Jedi Master's decision to link up with this foolish-looking creature. Somewhere in the distance, they could hear the steady, deep thrum of Federation transport engines. "How much farther?" Qui-Gon pressed their reluctant guide. The Gungan pointed at the lake.
"We go underwater, Okide."
The Jedi looked at each other, then extracted small containers from their clothing, releasing portable breathing devices the size of the palms of their hands.
"Me warning yous,"
Jar Jar's eyes shifted from one to the other.
"Gungans no like yous outlanders. Yous not gonna get warm welcome."
Obi-Wan shrugged. "Don't worry, this hasn't been our day for warm welcomes." "Get going," Qui-Gon motioned, fitting the device between his teeth. The Gungan shrugged, as if to disclaim all responsibility for what would follow, turned back to the lake, performed a wild double somersault, and disappeared into the gloom. The Jedi waded after him. Downward into the murkiness they swam, the Jedi following the slender form of the Gungan, who seemed far more at home in the water than on land. He swam smoothly and gracefully, long limbs extended, body undulating with practiced ease. They swam for a long time, angling steadily deeper, the light from the surface fading slowly away behind them. What light there was came from sources beneath the surface, not all of them visible. The minutes slipped away, and Obi-Wan began to have second thoughts about what they were doing. Then suddenly there was a new light, this one a steady glow that came from ahead. Slowly, Ota Gunga came into view. The city was comprised of a cluster of bubbles that connected to one another like balloons and were anchored to several huge rock pillars. One by one, the bubbles grew more distinct, and it became possible to make out the particulars of the structures within and the features of the Gungans as they moved about their business. Jar Jar swam directly toward one of the larger bubbles, the Jedi close on his heels. When he reached the bubble, he pushed at it with his hands, and it gave way to him, accepting first his arms, then his head and body, and finally his legs, swallowing him whole and closing behind him without rupturing. Amazed, the Jedi followed, moving through the strange membrane, entering the bubble without resistance. Once inside, they found themselves on a platform that led down to a square surrounded by buildings. Light emanated from the bubble's walls in a steady glow, brightening the space inside. The Jedi found the air breathable. As they descended to the square below, water dripping from their clothing, Gungans began to catch sight of them and to scatter with small cries of alarm. In short order, a squad of uniformed Gungan soldiers appeared, riding two-legged mounts with billed faces not entirely dissimilar to their own. Kadu, Qui-Gon recalled, swamp runners with powerful legs, great endurance, and keen senses. The Gungans carried long, deadly-looking electropoles, which they used to motion back the distraught populace at the same time they advanced on the intruders.
"Hey-de-ho, Captain Tarples!"
Jar Jar greeted the leader of the squad cheerfully.
"Me back!"
"Not again, Jar Jar Binks,"
the other snapped, clearly irritated.
"Yous gone to Bas Nass. See what he say. Yous may be in big trouble this time."
Ignoring the Jedi, he gave Jar Jar a quick poke with his electropole, sending a shock through the hapless Gungan that lifted him a half meter off the ground. Jar Jar rubbed his backside ruefully, muttering. The Gungan soldiers took them through the buildings of the city, down several connecting passages, and into what, Jar Jar whispered to his companions, was the high tower boardroom. The room was transparent on all sides, and small glowing fish swam about the outside of the membrane, tiny stars against a darker backdrop. A long circular bench dominated one end of the room, with one section set higher than the rest. All the seats were occupied by Gungan officials in their robes of office, and a way was quickly made for the newcomers through Gungans already present to conduct other business. The Gungan occupying the highest seat was a heavy-set squat fellow, so compressed by age and weight that it was impossible to imagine he had ever been as slender as Jar Jar Binks. Folds of skin draped over his body in loose layers, his neck was compressed into his shoulders, and his face bore such a sour look that even Jar Jar seemed more than a little cowed as they were motioned forward. The Gungan officials stared, muttering among themselves, as the Jedi approached.
"What yous want, outlanders?"
Bas Nass rumbled at them, after identifying himself. Qui-Gon Jinn told him, relating what had brought the Jedi to Naboo, warning of the invasion taking place above, asking the Gungans to give them help. The Gungan council listened patiently, saying nothing until Qui-Gon was finished. Bas Nass shook his head, the flesh of his thick neck jiggling with the movement.
"Yous can't be here. Tis army of mechaniques up there. Tis not our problem."
Qui-Gon held his ground. "That army of battle droids is about to attack the Naboo. We must warn them."
"We no like the Naboo," Bas Nass growled irritably. "And they no like the Gungans. The Naboo think they more smart than us. They think they brain so big. They have nothing to do with us, 'cause we live in the swamp and they live up there. Long time no have nothing to do with each other. This not gonna change because of mechaniques."
"After that army takes control of the Naboo, they will come here and take control of you," Obi-Wan said quietly. Bas Nass chuckled.
"No, me think not. Me talk maybe 1-2 times with Naboo in whole life, and no talk ever with mechaniques. Mechaniques no come here. They not even know Gungans exist."
The remaining members of the council nodded in agreement, muttering their verbal approval of Bas Nass's wisdom.
"You and the Naboo are connected," Obi-Wan insisted, his youthful face intent, not ready to concede the matter. "What happens to one will affect the other. You must understand this."
Bas Nass dismissed him with a wave of one thick hand.
"We know nothing of yous, outlander, and we no care about the Naboo."
Before Obi-Wan could continue his argument, Qui-Gon stepped forward.
"Then speed us on our way," he demanded, bringing up one hand in a casual motion, passing it smoothly before the Gungan chief's eyes in a quick invocation of Jedi mind power. Bas Nass stared at him, then nodded.
"We speed yous far away."
Qui-Gon held his gaze. "We need transport to Theed."
"Okay-day."
Bas Nass nodded some more.
"We give yous bongo. The speedest way to the Naboo is going through the core. Yous go now."
Qui-Gon stepped back. "Thank you for your help. We go in peace." As the Jedi turned to leave, Obi-Wan whispered, "Master, what is a bongo?" Qui-Gon glanced at him and cocked one eyebrow thoughtfully. "A ship of some sort, I hope." They were moving away from Boss Nass and the other Gungan officials when they caught sight of Jar Jar Binks standing forlornly to one side, wearing wrist binders and awaiting his fate. Qui-Gon slowed and made eye contact with the unfortunate creature. "Master," Obi-Wan said softly in warning. He knew Qui-Gon too well not to see what was coming. The tall Jedi moved over to Jar Jar and stood looking at him.
"They set news up for bad fall,"
the Gungan declared sullenly, glancing around to see if anyone else might be listening.
"Going through the core is bad danger."
Qui-Gon nodded. "Thank you, my friend." Jar Jar Binks shrugged and looked sad.
"Oh, it is okay."
Then he gave the Jedi Master a slow, sheepish grin and a hopeful look.
"Hey, any help here would be hot."
Qui-Gon hesitated.
"We are short of time, Master," Obi-Wan advised quietly, moving to his side.
The Jedi Master turned to face his protege, eyes distant.
"Time spent here may help us later. Jar Jar might be of some use."
Obi-Wan shook his head in frustration. His mentor was too eager to involve himself when it was not necessary. He was too quick to adopt causes that were not his own. It had cost him time and time again with the Jedi Council. One day it would be his undoing. He bent close.
"I sense a loss of focus."
Qui-Gon's eyes fixed on him. "Be mindful, young Obi-Wan," he chastised gently. "Your sensitivity to the living force is not your strength." The younger Jedi held his gaze only a moment, then looked away, stung by the criticism. Qui-Gon turned from him and walked back to Boss Nass.
"What is to become of Jar Jar Binks?" he asked.
Boss Nass, who was engaged in conversation with another of the Gungan officials, turned to him in annoyance, his heavy jowls puffing.
"Binks breaks no comeback law. Breaks exile. He be punished."
"Not too severely, I trust," the Jedi Master pressed.
"He has been of great help to us." A slow laugh rumbled out of Boss Nass.
"Pounded into death, this one."
Somewhere in the background, Jar Jar Binks moaned loudly. There were mutterings about the room. Even Obi-Wan, who was back at his master's side, looked shocked. Qui-Gon was thinking fast.
"We need a navigator to get us through the core to Theed. I saved Jar Jar's life on the surface. He owes me for that. I claim a life debt on him."
Boss Nass stared at the Jedi in silence, a deep frown furrowing his brow and twisting his mouth. His head seemed to sink deeper into his shoulders, into the wattles of skin that obscured his neck. Then his small eyes sought the unfortunate Jar Jar, and he gestured.
"Binks?"
Jar Jar moved forward obediently to stand beside the Jedi.
"Yous have life debt with this outlander?"
Boss Nass demanded darkly. Jar Jar nodded, head and ears hanging, but a flicker of hope springing into his eyes.
"Your gods demand he satisfy that debt," Qui-Gon insisted, passing his hand in front of Boss Nass's eyes, invoking his Jedi power once more. "His life belongs to me now."
The head Gungan considered the matter only a moment before nodding in agreement.
"His life tis yours. Worthless anywhat. Begone with him."
A guard came forward and removed Jar Jar's wrist binders. "Come, Jar Jar," Qui-Gon Jinn advised, turning him away.
"To the core?"
Jar Jar gasped, realizing suddenly what had happened.
"Count me out of this. Better dead here than dead in the core. Me not go."
But by then, the Jedi were dragging him out of the room and all sight and sound of Boss Nass. On the bridge of the Trade Federation's lead battleship, Newt Gunray and Rune Hakko stood alone before a hologram of Darth Sidious.
Neither of the Nemoidians was looking at the other, and both were hoping the Sith Lord could not sense what they were thinking.
"The invasion is on schedule, my lord," the Viceroy was saying, robes and headdress hiding the occasional twitching of his limbs as he faced the cloaked and hooded form before him.
"Our army nears Theed."
"Good. Very good."
Darth Sidious spoke in a soft, calm voice.
"I have the Senate bogged down in procedures. By the time this incident comes up for a vote, they will have no choice but to accept that your blockade has been successful."
Newt Gunray glanced quickly at his compatriot.
"The Queen has great faith that the Senate will side with her."
"Queen Amidala is young and naive.
You will find controlling her will not be difficult."
The hologram shimmered.
"You have done well, Viceroy."
"Thank you, my lord,"
the other acknowledged as the hologram faded away. In the ensuing silence, the Nemoidians turned to each other with knowing looks.
"You didn't tell him," Rune Hakko said accusingly.
"Of the missing Jedi?"
Newt Gunray made a dismissive gesture.
"No need to tell him that. No need to tell him anything until we know for certain what has happened."
Rune Hakko studied him a long time before turning away.
"No, no need," he said softly, and walked from the room.
5. Obi-Wan Kenobi sat hunched over the controls of the bongo, familiarizing himself with their functions, as Jar Jar Binks, positioned next to him, rambled on and on about nothing. Qui-Gon sat in the shadows behind them, silent and watchful.
"This is nutsin',"
Jar Jar moaned as the bongo motored steadily away from the shimmering lighted bubbles of Votagunga and deeper into the waters of Naboo. The bongo was an ungainly little underwater craft that consisted mostly of an electrical power plant, guidance system, and passenger seating. It looked somewhat like a species of squid, having flat swept-back fins and aft tentacles that rotated to propel the craft. 3 bubble-canopied passenger compartments were arranged symmetrically, one on each wing and the 3rd forward on the nose. The Jedi and the Gungan occupied the nose compartment, where Obi-Wan had assumed command of the controls, and Jar Jar had been instructed to start directing them through the core. It seemed that there were underwater passageways all through the planet, and if you were able to locate the right one, you could cut travel time considerably. Or, in the alternative, Obi-Wan thought darkly, you could cut your own throat.
"We doomed,"
Jar Jar muttered plaintively. His flat-billed face lifted away from the directional guidance system toward the Jedi, his long ears swaying like ridiculous flaps.
"Hey-de-ho! Where are we going, Captain Qui-Gon?"
"You're the navigator," Qui-Gon observed. Jar Jar shook his head.
"Me? You's dreamin'. Don't know nothin' about this, me."
Qui-Gon placed a hand on the Gungan's shoulder.
"Just relax, my friend. The Force will guide us."
"The Force? What is the Force?"
Jar Jar did not look impressed.
"Maxi big thing is Force, yous betcha. Gonna save me, yous, all us, huh?"
Obi-Wan closed his eyes in dismay. This was a disaster waiting to happen. But it was Qui-Gon's disaster to manage. It was not his place to interfere. Qui-Gon had made the decision to bring Jar Jar Binks along, after all. Not because he was a skilled navigator, or had displayed even the slightest evidence of talent in any other regard, but because he was another project that Qui-Gon, with his persistent disregard for the dictates of the Council, had determined had value and could be reclaimed. It was a preoccupation that both mystified and frustrated Obi-Wan. His mentor was perhaps the greatest Jedi alive, a commanding presence at Council, a strong and brave warrior who refused to be intimidated by even the most daunting challenge, and a good and kind man. Maybe it was the latter that had gotten him into so much trouble. He repeatedly defied the Council in matters that Obi-Wan thought barely worthy of championing.
He was possessed of his own peculiar vision of a Jedi's purpose, of the nature of his service, and of the causes he should undertake, and he followed that vision with unwavering single-mindedness. Obi-Wan was young and impatient, headstrong, and not yet at one with the Force in the way that Qui-Gon was. But he understood better, he thought, the dangers of overreaching, of taking on too many tasks. Qui-Gon would dare anything when he found a challenge that interested him, even if he risked himself in the undertaking. So it was here. Jar Jar Binks was a risk of the greatest magnitude, and there was no reason to think that embracing such a risk would reap even the smallest reward. The Gungan muttered some more, all the while casting about through the viewport as if seeking a road sign that would allow him to at least pretend he knew what he was doing. Obi-Wan gritted his teeth. "Stay out of it," he told himself sternly. "Stay out of it." "Here, take over," he snapped at Jar Jar. He moved out of his seat to kneel close to Qui-Gon. "Master," he said, unable to help himself, "why do you keep dragging these pathetic life-forms along with us when they are of so little use?" Qui-Gon Jinn smiled faintly. "He seems that way now, perhaps, but you must look deeper, Obi-Wan." "I've looked deep enough, and there's nothing to see," Obi-Wan flushed with irritation. "He is an unneeded distraction." "Maybe for the moment, but that may change with time." Obi-Wan started to say something more, but the Jedi Master cut him short. "Listen to me, my young Padawan. There are secrets hidden in the Force that are not easily discovered. The Force is vast and pervasive, and all living things are a part of it. It is not always apparent what their purpose is, however. Sometimes that purpose must be sensed first in order that it may be revealed later." Obi-Wan's young face clouded. "Some secrets are best left concealed, Master." He shook his head. "Besides, why must you always be the one to do the uncovering? You know how the Council feels about these detours. Perhaps just once, the uncovering should be left to someone else." Qui-Gon looked suddenly sad. "No, Obi-Wan. Secrets must be exposed when found. Detours must be taken when encountered. And if you are the one who stands at the crossroads or the place of concealment, you must never leave it to another to act in your place." The last of the lights from Ota Gunga disappeared in a wash of murkiness, and the waters closed around them in a dark cloud. Jar Jar Binks was taking the craft ahead at a slow, steady speed, no longer muttering or squirming, his hands fixed on the controls. He flipped on the lights as darkness closed about, and the broad yellow beams revealed vast stretches of multicolored coral weaving and twisting away through the black. "I respect your judgment in this, Master," Obi-Wan said finally, "but it doesn't stop me from worrying." Like all of the Jedi Knights, Obi-Wan Kenobi had been identified and claimed early in his life from his birth parents. He no longer remembered anything of them now. The Jedi Knights had become his family. Of those, he was closest to Qui-Gon, his mentor for more than a dozen years, who had become his most trusted friend. Qui-Gon understood his attachment and shared it. Obi-Wan was the son he would never have. He was the future he would leave behind when he died. His hopes for Obi-Wan were enormous, but he did not always share his students' beliefs. "Be patient with me, Obi-Wan," he replied softly. "A little faith sometimes goes a long way." The Bongo navigated a coral tunnel, the bridge work revealed in deep fissures of crimson and mauve in the glow of the little craft's lights. All about, brightly colored fish swam in schools through the craggy rock. "Are the Gungans and the Naboo at war with each other?" Qui-Gon asked Jar Jar thoughtfully. The Gungan shook his head.
"No war. Naboo and Gungans don't fight. Long time ago, maybe. Now Naboo keep out of swamp, Gungans keep out of plains. They don't even see each other."
"But they don't like each other," the Jedi Master pressed. Jar Jar snorted.
Nabu got a big heads. All the time think they so much better than the Gungans. Big nuttons.
Obi-Wan bent over Jar Jar Binks, his eyes directed out the viewport. "Why were you banished, Jar Jar?" he asked. The Gungan made a series of small smacking sounds with his billed lips.
"It is kind of a long story, but keep it short. Me... kind of clumsy."
"You were banished because you're clumsy?" Obi-Wan exclaimed in disbelief. The Bongo turned down through an open stretch of water between two huge coral shelves. Neither the Jedi nor the Gungan saw the dark shape that detached itself from the larger outcropping and began to track them. Jar Jar squirmed.
"Because maybe one or two little bitty accidents. Boom de gasser, crash der boss's hayblipper, then they banish me."
Obi-Wan was not entirely sure what Jar Jar was telling him, but before he could ask for clarification, there was a loud thump as something struck the Bongo, causing it to lurch sharply to one side. A huge crustacean with multiple legs and massive jaws ringed with teeth had hooked them with its long tongue and was drawing them steadily toward its widespread maw.
"OPC killer!"
Jar Jar cried in dismay.
"We doomed!"
"Full speed ahead, Jar Jar," Qui-Gon ordered quickly, watching the jaws open behind them. But instead of pushing the throttles forward, Jar Jar panicked and jammed them into reverse, causing the little ship to fly directly into the mouth of their attacker. The Bongo slammed into the back of the monster's throat with a heavy thump that sent the Jedi reeling over the seats and into the walls. Rows of jagged teeth began to close about them as the lights on the control panel flickered uncertainly.
"Uh-oh!"
Jar Jar Binks said. Obi-Wan leapt quickly back into the co-pilot seat.
"Here, give me the controls!"
He seized the throttles and steering apparatus and shoved everything into forward, full speed ahead. To his surprise, the OPC killer's mouth opened with a spasmodic jerk, and they shot through its teeth as if from a laser cannon.
"We free! We free!"
Jar Jar was jumping about in his seat, ecstatic over their good fortune. But a quick glance back revealed that they were lucky for a different reason than they thought. The OPC killer was caught in the jaws of a creature so huge that it dwarfed even the beast it was eating. A long, eel-like hunter with clawed forelegs, rear fins, and a wicked pair of jaws was crunching the sea killer into tiny bits and swallowing it down eagerly.
"Sando Aqua Monster! Uh-oh!"
Jar Jar Binks moaned, burying his face in his hands. Obi-Wan increased power, trying to put more distance between themselves and this newest threat. The Sando Aqua Monster disappeared behind them, but the lights of the Bongo were flickering ominously. The little craft dived deeper, penetrating the planet's core. Suddenly, something exploded inside a control panel behind them, showering the cabin with sparks. Seams split overhead, and water began leaking through the Bongo's outer skin.
"Master," Obi-Wan said as the power drive whine took a sudden dive, "we're losing power."
Qui-Gon was working over the troubled control panel, head lowered.
"Stay calm. We're not in trouble yet."
"Not yet!"
Jar Jar had lost all pretense of calm and was flailing about in his seat.
"Monsters out there? Leaking in here! We sinking with no power! Yous nuts! When yous think we in trouble?"
With that, the lights inside the Bongo went completely black. Jar Jar Binks had his answer. In the conference room of the lead battleship of the Trade Federation fleet, a hologram of Darth Sidious towered over Newt Gunray and Roon Hakko. The Nemoidian viceroy and his lieutenant stood motionless before it, reddish-orange eyes fixed and staring, reptilian faces betraying every bit of the fear that held them paralyzed. The black-cloaked figure of Darth Sidious regarded them silently. There was no hint of expression on his shadowed countenance, which was mostly hidden within the folds of the cloak's hood. But the rigid posture of the Sith Lord's body spoke volumes.
"You disappoint me, Viceroy," he hissed at Newt Gunray.
"My lord,
I am certain that all...
The subject of his anger tried futilely to explain.
Worse! You defy me!
The Nemoidian's face underwent a terrifying transformation.
No, my lord, never! These Jedi are... resourceful, that's all. Not easily destroyed.
Alive, then, Viceroy?
No, no, I'm sure they're dead. They must be. We just haven't been able to confirm it yet.
Darth Sidious ignored him.
If they are alive, they will show themselves. When they do, Viceroy, I want to know immediately. I will deal with them myself.
Newt Gunray looked as if he might collapse under the weight of the Sith Lord's penetrating stare.
Yes, my lord,
he managed, as the hologram vanished.
Inside the troubled Bongo, Obi-Wan fought to keep control as the little craft began to drift aimlessly. Abruptly, the whine of the power drive came alive and the aft drive fins began to turn.
Oh, power's back, Obi-Wan breathed gratefully.
The lights on the control panels blinked on, flickered, and steadied. The exterior directional lights followed, momentarily blinding them as they reflected off rock walls and jagged outcroppings. Then Jar Jar screamed. A new monster was sitting right in front of them, all spines and scales and teeth, crooked clawed forelegs raised defensively.
"Kolo Clawfish!" the Gungan shrieked. "Use Jedi, do something! Where the Force now, you think?"
"Relax," Qui-Gon Jinn said softly, placing his hand on Jar Jar's twitching shoulder. The Gungan jerked and promptly fainted.
"You overdid it," Obi-Wan observed, wheeling the Bongo about and jetting away through the darkness. Even without looking, he knew the Kolo Clawfish was in pursuit. They were inside a tunnel that probably served as the creature's lair. They were lucky to have caught it by surprise. He angled the Bongo toward the cave entrance and a series of overhangs that might provide them with a little protection on their way out. Something slammed into the Bongo, held it fast momentarily, then released it. Obi-Wan increased power to the drive fins.
"Come on, come on," he breathed softly.
They shot out of the cave, directly into the jaws of the waiting Sando Aqua monster. The creature jerked back at the unexpected invasion, giving Obi-Wan just an instant to bank their craft hard to the right. The jaws of the Aqua monster were still open as they sped between teeth the size of buildings. Jar Jar's eyes flickered open. He caught sight of the teeth and promptly fainted again. Out through a gap in the Sando Aqua monster's fangs they sped, the Bongo shaking with the thrust of its power drive. But the Kolo Clawfish, still in pursuit, did not veer aside quickly enough and flew right into the larger hunter's maw. The jaws came down, engulfing it. Obi-Wan increased power to the drive fins as bits of the Kolo Clawfish re-emerged briefly through the Sando Aqua monster's grinding teeth, only to be sucked quickly from sight again.
"Let's hope that's all the snack he requires," the Jedi observed with a quick glance back.
Apparently it was, because it did not come after them. It took a while to revive Jar Jar, and a good deal longer to complete their voyage through the core, but with the Gungan's somewhat questionable help, they finally emerged from the darkness of the deeper waters toward a blaze of sunlight. The Bongo popped to the surface of an azure body of water, green hills and trees rising about them, clouds and blue sky overhead. Obi-Wan steered the little craft to the nearest shore, shut down the engines, and released the nose hatch. Qui-Gon rose and looked around.
"Oh, he's safe now,"
Jar Jar observed with a grateful sigh, leaning back in his seat.
"Tisoki day, hey?"
"That remains to be seen," the Jedi Master said. "Let's be off." He climbed from the Bongo onto the shore and started away. Obi-Wan glanced meaningfully at Jar Jar and followed. The Gungan stared doubtfully after the departing Jedi.
Me comin,"
he muttered, and hurried after. 6. It was a little more than a week after the pod race and the encounter with the old spacer that Watto summoned Anakin into the musty confines of the junk shop and told him he was to take a speeder out to the Dune Sea to do some trading with the Jawas. The Jawas, scavengers, were offering a number of droids for sale or trade, some of them mechanics, and while Watto wasn't about to part with usable currency, he didn't want to pass up a bargain if it could be had for a favorable barter. Anakin had traded on Watto's behalf before, and the Toydarian knew that the boy was good at this, too. The blue face hovered close to Anakin's own, tiny wings beating madly.
"Bring me what I need, boy, and don't mess up."
Anakin was entrusted with a variety of difficult-to-obtain engine and guidance systems parts that the Jawas would covet, and Watto could afford to give up for the right set of droids. The boy was to take the speeder out into the Dune Sea for a midday meeting with the Jawas, make his trade, and be back by sunset. No detours, and no fooling around. Watto hadn't forgiven him yet for losing the pod race and smashing his best racer, and he was letting the boy know it.
"March the droids back if you can't barter for a float sled."
Watto flitted about, issuing orders, a blue blur.
"If they can't walk this far, they aren't of any use to me. Pete, uncle, make sure you don't get taken. My reputation is at stake."
Anakin listened attentively and nodded at all the right places, the way he had learned to do over the years. It was only a little past mid-morning, and there was plenty of time to do what was needed. He had traded with the Jawas many times, and he knew how to make certain they did not get the best of him. There was a great deal Watto didn't know about Anakin Skywalker, the boy thought to himself as he went out the door to claim his speeder and begin his journey. One of the tricks to being a successful slave was to know things your master didn't know, and to take advantage of that knowledge when it would do you some good. Anakin had a gift for pod racing, and a gift for taking things apart and putting them back together, and making them work better than they had before. But it was his strange ability to sense things, to gain insights through changes in temperament, reactions, and words, that served him best. He could tune in to other creatures, bond with them so closely he could sense what they were thinking and what they would do almost before they did. It had served him well in dealing with the Jawas, among others, and it gave him a distinct edge in bartering on Watto's behalf. Anakin had a couple of important secrets he kept from Watto as well. The first was the protocol droid he was reconstructing in his bedroom work area. It was far enough along that, even though it was missing its skin and an eye, it could stand and move around, and its intelligence and communications processors were up and running. Good enough to do the job he required of it, he concluded, which was to accompany him on his bartering mission. The droid could listen in on the Jawas in their own peculiar language, which Anakin did not understand or speak particularly well. By doing so, it could let Anakin know if they were trying to slip anything by him. Watto didn't know how far he had gotten with the droid, and there wasn't much danger Watto could find out while they were out in the Dune Sea. The second and more important secret concerned the pod racer the boy was building. He had been working on it for almost 2 years, salvaging bits and pieces as he went, assembling it under cover of an old tarp in an area of the common refuse dump in back of the slave housing. His mother had indulged him, mindful of his interest in taking things apart and putting them back together. She didn't see the harm in allowing him to have this project to work on in his spare time, and Watto knew nothing of the pod. That was an inspired bit of subterfuge on Anakin's part. He knew, just as with the droid, that if it appeared to have any value at all, Watto would claim it. So he deliberately kept it looking as if it were a complete piece of junk, disguising its worth in a variety of clever ways. To all intents and purposes, it would never run. It was just another childish project. It was just a little boy's dream. But for Anakin Skywalker, it was the first step in his life plan. He would build the fastest pod racer ever, and he would win every race in which it was entered. He would build a starfighter next, and he would pilot it off Tatooine to other worlds.
He would take his mother with him, and they would find a new home. He would become the greatest pilot ever, flying all the ships of the mainline, and his mother would be so proud of him. And one day, when he had done all this, they would be slaves no longer. They would be free. He thought about this often, not because his mother encouraged him in any way or because he was given any reason to think it might happen, but simply because he believed, deep down inside where it mattered, that it must. He thought about it now as he guided his speeder through the streets of Mos Espa, the protocol droid sitting in the rear passenger compartment, skeletal-like without its skin and motionless because he had deactivated it for the ride out. He thought about all the things he would do and places he would go, the adventures he would have and the successes he would enjoy, and the dreams he would see come true. He drove the speeder out from the city under Tatooine suns, the heat rising off the desert sands in a shimmering wave, the light reflecting off the metal surface of the speeder like white fire. He proceeded east for about 2 standard hours until he reached the edge of the Dune Sea. The meeting with the Jawas was already in place, arranged by Watto the day before by transmitter. The Jawas would be waiting by Mochat Steep, a singular rock formation about halfway across the sea. Goggles, gloves, and helmet firmly in place, the boy cranked up the power on the speeder and hastened ahead through the midday heat. He found the Jawas waiting for him, their monstrous sandcrawler parked in the shadow of the steep, the droids they wished to trade lined up at the end of the crawler's ramp. Anakin parked his speeder close to where the little robed figures waited, yellow eyes gleaming watchfully in the shadows of their hoods, and climbed out. He activated the protocol droid and ordered him to follow. With the droid trailing obediently, he walked slowly down the line of mechanicals, making a show of carefully studying each. When he was finished, he drew his droid aside. "Which ones are best, C-3PO?" he asked. He'd given it a number the night before, choosing 3 because the droid made the 3rd member of his little family after his mother and himself. "Oh, well, Master Anakin, I'm flattered that you would ask, but I would never presume to infringe on your expertise, my own being so meager, although I do have knowledge of some 5,100 different varieties of droids and over 5,000 different internal processors and 10 times that many chips, and—" "Just tell me which ones are best," Anakin hissed under his breath. He had forgotten that C-3PO was first and foremost a protocol droid, and, while possessed of extensive knowledge, tended to defer to the humans he served. "Which ones, 3PO?" he repeated. "Left to right. Number them off to me." C-3PO did so. "Do you wish me to enumerate their capabilities and design specialties, Master Anakin?" he asked solicitously, cocking his head. Anakin silenced him with a wave of his hand as the head Jawa approached. They bartered back and forth for a time, Anakin getting a sense of how far the Jawas could be pushed, how much subterfuge was taking place with regard to their droids, and how badly they wanted the goods he was offering in exchange. He was able to determine that several of the best droids were still inside the crawler, a fact that C-3PO picked up from an unguarded comment made by a Jawa off to one side. The head Jawa squeaked at him furiously, of course, but the damage was done. 3 more droids were brought out, and again Anakin took a few moments to inspect them, C-3PO at his side. They were good models, and the Jawas were not particularly eager to part with them for anything less than a combination of currency and goods. Anakin and the head Jawa, who were of about the same height and weight, stood nose to nose, arguing the matter for a long time. When the bartering was completed, Anakin had traded a little more than half of what he had brought as barter for 2 mechanic droids in excellent condition, 3 more multi-purpose droids that were serviceable, and a damaged hyperdrive converter that he could put back into service in no time. He could have traded for another 2 or 3 droids, but the quality of those that remained wasn't sufficiently high to part with any more of Watto's goods, and Watto would be quick to see that. There was no float sled to be had, so Anakin lined up the newly purchased droids behind the speeder, placed C-3PO in the rear passenger compartment to keep an eye on them, and set off for Mos Espa. It was just after midday.
The little procession was a curious sight. The speeder leading, hovering just off the sand, thrusters on dead slow. The droids trailing behind, jointed limbs working steadily to keep pace.
"That was an excellent trade, Master Anakin," C-3PO advised cheerfully, keeping his one good eye on their purchases. "You are to be congratulated. I think those Jawas learned a hard lesson today. You really did show them a thing or two about hard bargaining. Why, that pit droid alone is worth much more than—"
The droid rattled on incessantly, but Anakin let him alone, ignoring most of what he said, content to let his mind wander for a bit now that the hard part was done. Even with the droid slowing them down, they should reach the edge of the Dune Sea before mid-afternoon and Mos Espa before dark. He would have time to sneak C-3PO back into his bedroom and deliver the purchased droids and the balance of the trade goods to Watto. Maybe that would get him back in the Toydarian's good graces. Certainly Watto would be pleased with the converter. They were hard to come by out here, and if it could be made to work, which Anakin was certain it could, it would be worth more than all the rest of the purchases combined. They crossed the central flats and climbed the slow rise to Zelric Draw, a shallow, wide-mouthed canyon that split the Mospec High Range just inside the lip of the Dune Sea. The speeder eased inside the canyon, droids strung out in a gleaming mechanical line behind, passing out of sunlight into shadow. The temperature dropped a few degrees, and the silence changed pitch in the lee of the cliffs. Anakin glanced about warily, knowing the dangers of the desert as well as any who were from Mos Espa, although he was inclined to think from time to time that it was safer out here than in the city.
A 4-to-1 ratio of Rhodians to Huts when the settlement began to take on the look and feel of a trading center, although even then it was clear the Huts were the dominant species, and the Rhodians might just as well have stayed home rather than chance a long and somewhat purposeless flight.
C-3PO rambled on, changing subjects without urging, asking nothing in return for his non-stop narrative but to be allowed to continue. Anakin wondered if he was suffering some sort of sensory vocal deprivation from being deactivated for so long. These protocol droids were known to be temperamental. His gaze shifted suddenly to the right, to something that seemed strange and out of place. At first it was just a shape and coloring amid the desert sand and rock, almost lost in the shadows. But as he stared harder, it took on fresh meaning. He banked the speeder sharply, bringing the line of droids around with him.
"Master Anakin, whatever are you doing?" C-3PO protested peevishly,
his one eye fixed on Anakin.
"Mos Espa is down the canyon draw, not through the side of the—" "Oh my, is that what I think it is? Master, there is every reason to turn right around."
"I know," Anakin cut the droid short. "I just want to look." C-3PO's arms fluttered anxiously.
"I must protest, Master Anakin. This is most unwise. If I am correct, and I must tell you that I have calculated that degree of probability at 99.7, then we are headed directly toward—"
But Anakin didn't need to be told what lay ahead, having already determined exactly what it was. A Tusken Raider lay crumpled on the ground, half buried by a pile of rocks close against the cliff face. The look and garb of the Sand People were unmistakable, even at this distance. Loose, tan-colored clothing, heavy leather gloves and boots, bandolier and belt, cloth-wrapped head with goggles and breath mask, and a long, dual-handled blaster rifle lying a meter away from an outstretched arm. A fresh scar slicing down from the cliff face bore evidence of a slide. The raider had probably been hiding above when the rock gave way beneath his feet and buried him in the fall. Anakin stopped the speeder and climbed down.
"Master Anakin, I don't think this is a good idea at all," C-3PO declared in a sharp tone of admonishment. "I just want to look, that's all," the boy repeated.
He was wary and a little scared of doing this, but he had never seen a Tusken Raider up close, although he had heard stories about them all his life. The Tuskens were a reclusive, fierce, nomadic people who claimed the desert as their own and lived off those foolish enough to venture into their territory unprepared. On foot or astride the wild banthas they had claimed from the wastelands, they traveled where they chose, pillaging outlying homes and way stations,
waylaying caravans, stealing goods and equipment, and terrorizing everyone in general. They had even gone after the huts on occasion. The residents of Mos Espa, themselves a less than respectable citizenry, hated the Sand People with a passion. Anakin had not yet made up his mind about them. The stories were chilling, but he knew enough of life to know there were two sides to every story, and mostly only one being told. He was intrigued by the wild, free nature of the Tuscans, of a life without responsibility or boundaries, of a community in which everyone was considered equal. He left the speeder and walked toward the fallen raider. 3PO continued to admonish him, to warn him he was making a mistake. In truth, he wasn't all that sure the droid was wrong. But his trepidation was overcome by his curiosity. What could it hurt to have just the briefest of looks? His boyish nature surfaced and took control. He would be able to tell his friends he had seen one of the Sand People close up. He would be able to tell them what one really looked like. The Tusken raider lay sprawled face down, arms akimbo, head turned to one side. Rocks and debris buried most of the lower part of his body. One leg lay pinned beneath a massive boulder. Anakin edged closer to where the blaster rifle lay, then reached down and picked it up. It was heavy and unwieldy. A man would have to be strong and skilled to handle one, he thought. He noted the strange carvings on the stock. Tribal markings, perhaps. He had heard the Tuscans were a tribal people. Suddenly, the fallen raider stirred, drawing back one arm, bracing himself, and lifting his rapt head. Opaque goggles stared directly at Anakin. The boy backed away automatically. But the Tuscan just stared at him for a moment, taking in who he was and what he was doing, then laid his head down again. Anakin Skywalker waited, wondering what he should do. He knew what Watto would say. He knew what almost everyone would say. Get out of there, now! He put the blaster rifle down again. This was no business of his. He took a step back, then another. The Tusken raider lifted his head once more and stared at him. Anakin stared back. He could sense the pain in the other's gaze. He could feel his desperation, trapped and helpless beneath that boulder, stripped of his weapon and his freedom both. Anakin's brow furrowed. Would his mother tell him to get out of there too? What would she say if she were there? 3PO, he called back to the droid. Bring everybody over here. Protesting vehemently with every step, C-3PO gathered up the newly purchased droids and herded them to where the boy stood staring at the fallen Tusken. Anakin put the droids to work clearing away the smaller rocks and stones, then rigged a lever and used the speeder's weight to tilt the rock just enough that they could pull the pinned man free. The Tusken was awake briefly, but then lapsed back into unconsciousness. Anakin had the droids check for other weapons and kept the blaster rifle safely out of reach. While the Tusken raider was unconscious, the droids laid him on his back so he could be checked for injuries. The leg pinned by the boulder was smashed, the bones broken in several places. Anakin could see the damage through the torn cloth. But he wasn't familiar with Tusken physiology, and he didn't know exactly what to do to repair the damage. So he applied a quick-seal splint from the medical kit in the speeder to freeze the leg in place, and left it alone. He sat down then and thought about what he should do next. The light was beginning to fail. He had spent too much time freeing the Tusken to reach Mos Espa before nightfall. He could make the edge of the dune sea by dark, but only by leaving the Tusken behind, untended and alone. Anakin frowned. Given the things that roamed the desert when it got dark, he might as well bury the man and have done with it. So he had the droids pull a small glow unit out of the land speeder. When twilight descended, he powered up the glow unit and attached an extender fuel pack to assure it would burn all night. He broke out an old dried food pack and munched absently as he stared at the sleeping Tusken. His mother would be worried. Watto would be mad. But they knew him to be capable and reliable, and they would wait until daybreak to do anything about his absence. By then, he hoped, he would be well on his way home.
"Do you think he'll be all right?" he asked C-3PO. He had placed the speeder and the other droids under the lee of a cliff face behind the glow unit, safely tucked from view, but had kept C-3PO with him for company. Boy and droid sat huddled close together on one side of the glow unit, while the Tusken Raider continued to sleep on the other.
"I am afraid I lack the necessary medical training and information to make that determination, Master Anakin," C-3PO advised, cocking his head. "I certainly think you have done everything you possibly could."
The boy nodded thoughtfully.
"Master Anakin, we really shouldn't be out here at night," the droid observed after a moment. "This country is quite dangerous."
"But we couldn't leave him, could we?"
"Oh, well, that's a very difficult determination to make."
C-3PO pondered the matter.
"We couldn't take him with us, either."
"Certainly not." The boy sat in silence for a time, watching the Tusken sleep. He watched him for so long, in fact, that it came as something of a surprise when the Tusken finally stirred awake. It happened all at once, and it caught the boy off guard. The Tusken Raider shifted his weight with a lurching movement, exhaled sharply, propped himself up on one arm, looked at himself, then looked at the boy. The boy made no move or sound. The Tusken regarded him intently for a long minute, then slowly eased into a sitting position, his wounded leg stretched out in front of him.
This book is continued on Disc 3.